this market has been incredible, and it just keeps getting more incredible.
Markets outside of America are also surging. In fact, maybe even more than here. Japan's Nikkei hitting a new high back to 1991. The German DAX, that near its all-time high. And the EEM Emerging Markets ETF pacing for its longest daily win streak in a year and a half.
But at the same time, the market is overbought, and investors are optimistic. They're not euphoric yet, but they're optimistic.
We think equity markets are going to do fine this year. We do think there will probably be a bit of a scare in equity markets around April or so, but we think that markets are going to be fine.
So an overbought market with optimistic investors is vulnerable. And the question is, what triggers the vulnerability?
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, what a great way to start the year. On this Friday, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average over 25,000 and the S&P over 2,700. A lot of the forecast made for the year, we may reach that in the early part of it. And we also have a great unemployment report on Friday. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplavin. Welcome to this week's edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. Joining me in hour one will be Gary Dorsch as we talk about there is nothing out there that could stop this bull from running even further. About the only thing that could happen would be an aggressive Fed, but Gary doesn't see that. He sees a year of commodities, higher stock prices. Will 2018 repeat 2017? And later on, Dave Morgan will join me. We'll talk about gold, its recent run crossing over 1,300. Will this be sustainable? And how far will it go, and what influence Bitcoin is having on the gold market. And of course, Ryan Poplava will be here to talk about what moved the markets this week. All of that coming up in hour one.
And I'm John Loeffler, and here we are at the beginning of 2017. No, wait a minute. It's 2018. What happened to 2017? Oh my, it went by so fast. But you know, what a spectacular year for the markets. GDP's up 3%, stock market up double digits. It's a year where just about everybody made money. And now the question is, will 2018 be more of the same, less robust, or a year of some storms and volatility? So what we're going to do today during the big picture is follow our decades-long tradition here on the program of making predictions. We'll follow the Wall Street big firms, what they're thinking about the coming year, 2018, some of the outside of the box forecasts, and then some of the big surprises and black swans that might be coming our way. It's part one of a two-part series, which we've been doing since, I can't remember since we started doing it, but all of that coming up today on The Big Picture is a part of the Financial Sense News Hour. And speaking of long-term traditions on the program, it's 2018 as we start a new year afresh in the stock market. And here to tell us about it is Financial Sense Wealth Management's Ryan Poplava. So, Ryan, we sailed smoothly out of 2017, and who would have foreseen the record highs in the major stock indices? And right now, anyway, it looks like that trend is continuing for the time being with new highs on Friday, led by tech.
That's right, John. Looking at the stock sectors, energy actually was leading the way right up until that point on Friday when tech took the lead. Energy took a little bit of a correction, but the energy was doing very well this week based on a climb in Texas Intermediate oil prices up to almost a three-year high. A lot of commodities have been moving in that direction, maybe inflationary expectations. OPEC obviously made the changes it wanted to do last month. And then the conflict in Iran, even though that really is not going to have any large effect on supplies, unrest generally in the region creates a lot of anxiety, and that tends to lift up oil prices here and abroad as well. And then also, you know, the cooler temperatures with what meteorologists are calling a bomb cyclone off of the East Coast. That's when you're getting all the rainfall as well as flooding as well as ice and snow. It's really awful right now. And what tends to happen is as traders in these areas start to feel temperatures like this, historically, we have seen a rise in oil prices based off of what they need to be refined into, heating oil, et cetera, and distillates in the winter. So oil did very well this week. Nonetheless, tech took the lead on Friday as the best sector this week. And you're right, we did have a wonderful end to 2017 based off of phenomenal holiday results. A lot of reports coming in of growth there year over year. A lot of the retailers doing well and talking about the consumer doing a lot of purchasing online. We heard Amazon just really go off last week with a lot of statistic results that were just phenomenal. The top two products they sold were their own, were the Echo and their Fire TV Stick, were the number one and number two across all categories. And that was just a stellar year results so far that what they've said from the holiday season. But yes, finished the year great. How are we doing so far right now in 2018? New highs all across the board. The Dow Industrials, the transport indices, both hitting fresh all-time highs this week. Fresh closing highs on Friday. The NASDAQ, fresh closing high. The S&P 500, fresh closing high. Even for the Russell 2000, a fresh record closing high. So when you have all of those different indices, different categories, large cap, mid cap, a lot of tech in the NASDAQ, small cap in Russell, and a lot of financials in the Russell, when you have all these different categories hitting record highs, it really makes you feel like we are in a bull market. Not that we aren't, but you feel it. And the market is definitely in step. In fact, I was hearing from a news broadcast that the amount of closing orders that came in at the end of the day on Friday was just overwhelming, and that led to even greater close for these indices. So, you know, you can just sense the optimism in the economy, John. Markets have based off of the reaction we've seen by investors buying in at these levels, as well as from, like I said, hearing from confidently consumers ramping up their purchases, leveraging up. We've seen credit has been increasing as well. And then on the flip side this week, we heard from Walgreens Boots Alliance, dropped around 5% on Thursday, or I think it was either Wednesday or Thursday, based on, you know, they had better than expected earnings and revenues, but the reaction by investors was it wasn't enough, or maybe they didn't like the guidance or what they heard. Another retailer, L Brands, lowered its profit projections for the holidays, and on that day, Thursday, lost around 12% in value. So two companies, they don't really shape the whole group. Nonetheless, if you read on the other flip side of that coin, Amazon's holiday statistics, like I said, that they released right after Christmas, they had just a stellar season. So online, doing very well. Two of these brick and mortar, also online retailers. It'll be interesting to hear what we're going to hear from retailers throughout the rest of the earnings season as we get into it full swing in just a couple of weeks here, John. But until then, you know, we'll start with the introduction next week with financials for the fourth quarter earnings. It's right around the corner.
And she'll look forward to that next week, especially analyzing whether the run-up in stocks has really been just fluff or whether there's some real substance to it with earning results coming up later this month. And you know, Ryan, it is the beginning of the month and we usually get some key economic reports. Were there any that you wanted to spend some time on reviewing here?
There are, because, you know, like you said, it's really important not just to look at the earnings results, look at the hard numbers, you know, has the market been just moving up on fluff? Let's look at the economic numbers. And also in economic numbers, you get soft data, which is survey data like the ISM manufacturing and the services data. Then you get hard data, actual results coming in from the factory orders and construction orders, et cetera. So yes, we did get a little bit of both results this week. We got the ISM manufacturing numbers that showed that in December they went up. The surveys came in at 59.7. Anything above 50, that's expansionary. So anything above 50 is great. But of course, we want to see growth. So at 59.7, that's well above what we saw about a month ago at 58.2. If you look at the different categories in the manufacturing index, one of the big ones is new orders. And the survey there was showing a huge increase that bodes very well for January with a category that went up to around 69.4, up 5.5 points almost. Then there's the factory orders. Those were up about 1.3% for November. So there you go. Soft and hard manufacturing data, both pointing in the same direction, pointing towards growth. Construction spending in real estate, et cetera, is up around 0.8% in November. So that's a good number. Employment. So here's where there was a little bit of a disappointment. The big announcement was the payroll data on Friday, and it showed an increase of non-farm payrolls by about 148,000. However, John, the average hourly earnings component got quite a big tug higher. And that's the component that's been lacking all year last year, all year in 2016, is where's the inflation? We've got this almost full employment, which, by the way, the unemployment rate, I think, was stayed the same around 4.1%. So we've got this, what we call full employment, when we really can't go all that much lower based on, you know, a lot of structural reasons. So when you get there, what gives? Is this number going to keep going up more? Are we going to continue to grow at the same rate we've been growing on the employment side? No, not likely. The issue is that at near full employment, it's going to get harder to find the workers with the right skill set for what you need. You know, they're already employed, which then results in what? Higher pressure to wages, because you got to be able to attract the talent you need for your company. So as that happens, it could have some upward pressure on inflation, something the central bankers have been looking for all year last year. We finally might be getting it now, up 0.3%, something we've been, like I said, just been lacking for some time, which has allowed the Fed to maintain its gradual pace to rate hikes up until now.
And on that note, the Fed minutes were released this week from the December meeting. Did they shed any new light on policy and towards what may come early in 2018? Are you finally seeing any inflation-sensitive instrument investments react positively toward these results, by the way?
Yeah, and actually, I didn't mention it, but the Europeans manufacturing index also showed some very price-sensitive issues there. But yeah, so the minutes came and went really without a hiccup in the market. Most members of the voting committee believe that we're on the right track. Let's support a gradual pace here. And so likely no change. If you looked at back at what they estimated with the dot plot back in December, it looks like what they intend is an estimate of 3 rate hikes this year, like we had last year. But some voting members in the minutes this week mentioned that they see the possibility of being more aggressive based on all the fiscal stimulus we're finally starting to see that has passed, looking at the tax plan that just passed 2 weeks ago. Many of them feel the cuts will benefit the consumer as well as capital spending, but it's for even them and us, it's really not clear how much it's going to affect everyone. And, you know, we're still sifting through the tax laws ourselves and reviewing it with clients. So steady as she goes for the Federal Reserve with its gradual policy, at least until they see more inflationary pressures. We did see a little bit of a hint of it in inflation wages for December, but you know, look at the 10-year treasury. It's been coiling below 2.5% for some time, hasn't broken out above that. So if that continues to just stay down, I see no reason for the Fed to get all that very aggressive. And right now, if you look at the Fed futures, they're painting only a 67% chance of a rate hike in March. That's not very high. When we tend to see these federal futures towards where it's the market is really pricing in, we see rates up towards 90, even upwards to almost 100% for a rate hike. So that's in March. So far, 67% chance. But notwithstanding what we've seen in both the Treasury, investors are definitely holding back their inflationary expectations there. Commodities, John, have been on a roll over the past few weeks. And if you look at financials over the past few weeks as well, since the FOMC meeting last December, the financials have been doing well too. Even though, like I said, we haven't seen that 10-year treasury really break out. We haven't seen the yield curve really, you know, rise. It's been fairly flat. But the CRB index, which is a basket of commodities, primarily there's quite a bit of oil in there, that's rallied back up to its 2-year resistance level. So it dipped significantly last year, got back above its support, and now we have a full-fledged, you know, rising trend line in the CRB index. We also have a rising trend line in copper prices, rising trend line in gold. Gold's back above 1300, copper at 2-year highs. So a lot going on in commodities. And if you look at the performance and materials, the XLB is the ETF that shows the material index. Coal did very well on Friday. So the whole complex, oil did very well this week until Friday, where tech took over. Commodities have done well, despite, like I said, treasuries maybe painting a different picture on inflationary expectations.
Well, that's a good start for the new year. We'll be talking to you next week as we kick off earnings season with some light financial reading, I'm sure. But hopefully this year will be as exciting in the markets as it was last year. Anyway, belated Happy New Year, too.
Oh, you too, John, and to our listeners.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Pavlova or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
You know, Financial Sense News Hour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense News Hour featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
Right now, inventories are just not growing fast enough given final demand. So I think there's room for factories to sort of get into overdrive here and boost the level of inventory investment to kind of keep up with final demand. So that should be a tailwind for U.S. factories over the next couple of quarters. You know, what does it mean for equities? I think if the economy is growing, that's generally going to be a good sign for equity markets.
Well, it's a great time to start the year. The market's up again, setting records as of this Friday, the Dow over 25,000 and the S&P crossing 2,700. Will this rally continue? Will we set new records? And will 2018 be like 2017? Joining me on the program from Sir Charts-A-Lot is Gary Dorsch. Gary, let's begin with the S&P and the Dow both setting new records for the week as we speak.
Well, it certainly has been historic. It's been about a year and a half now since the Dow Industrials even had a 3% pullback during this most powerful parabolic rally that we are seeing. Since the vote for Brexit was the last time it had a pullback of 3% or more. And this has never happened before in history. The largest drawdown for the Dow was about 2.5% last year. So some people are saying that this has the characteristics more of a money market fund and not a stock market. With a money market fund, you're guaranteed to have a return of principal. And the only variable is what rate of return you're going to earn, whether it be single digits or maybe double digits. So it's gotten to the point where you can just pretty much put your money into this money minting machine and it generates a profit for you every single day without any major type of pullback. And to see the VIX index trading below 10 now for several months in a row, there's virtually no fear in the market of a pullback, and the only fear is the fear of missing out. So this is a mania, normally occurs at the tail end of a long-term bull market, and those who have missed the rally capitulate and begin to do things that they might otherwise not contemplate doing, which is piling a lot of their money into the market. And with passive investing now and into index funds, it's very simple and easy to be able to get involved. And everything is just a sort of a flowing on top of each other. If we look back at the fundamentals of this market, right now it's all psychological, but fundamentally, this market is being fueled by central banks, which are still massively printing money in Japan and in Europe. You have $11 trillion of short-term securities that are yielding under 0% in Europe and Japan. So these two culprits, the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank, can pat themselves on the back for this rally over the past year. And the Federal Reserve, of course, moving at a snail's pace to raise interest rates. The Fed funds rate at an average of 1.375% is still almost 1% below the inflation rate. So you have negative interest rates wherever you look, either on a real basis, discounted for inflation, or in nominal terms. And you combine that with stock buybacks by the S&P 500 companies, which have bought $3.5 trillion of their own stock over the last 8 years, retiring 18% of all the floating shares in the marketplace since 2009 through buybacks. And now with the tax cuts coming down the pipeline, with big cuts in corporate tax rates and $2.5 trillion of money sitting overseas that can be now used by the multinationals to buy back their own stock, you have generated a mania of buying and the fear of missing out.
Let me stop you there because, you know, we're talking and I want to get to the tax cuts and what that might do to corporate earnings. But I want to come back to what happened last year where we saw the stock market go up. It was like an escalator. I mean, there wasn't, what did we get? Maybe 2.5% correction. The other thing that we also saw last year is volatility reached a 50-year low when we got down to just below 9, I think it was in November. So when you see a market like you did last year with not so much as a 3% correction, much less a 5 or 10, it goes up on everything slow and steady. Like you said, it's almost like a money market fund. You have passive indexing, which is bringing all kinds of money into the market. So nobody asks at what price you're buying Amazon. How long can this continue? Because I've seen estimates with the cut in corporate tax rates from 35 to 20% in money coming back from overseas being taxed at a special rate. We could see 15 to 20% earnings growth. Wouldn't that fuel this stock market much longer?
Well, I think the consensus of opinion is now for the S&P to hit the 3,000 level, which would be roughly 10% higher from here between now and the end of the year. And I say that recognizing that, you know, the parabolic look of the chart pattern, but this is not your grandfather's stock market anymore. This is something different than I've ever seen in 38 years of watching the markets. So I would say, yes, there will be some pullback at some point in time. The inevitable 3% pullback will probably occur within the next few months. But once again, it'll be buy on the dip mentality. And we may very well see the S&P at the 3,000 level maybe about a year from now or slightly more than that. So here with the Dow over 25,000, which was a target I had talked about for quite some time, I can see it going even further higher now to say 27,500, with the caveat that there will be at least a 3% pullback between now and that time period. Everything seems to be going well, and only if the Federal Reserve takes the punch bowl away will the mania come to an end the way I can see it, or some event, maybe in the Middle East, a war perhaps with Iran, a real black swan type of event like that. But other than that, you'll have higher oil prices, faster inflation this upcoming year, and the Fed will be under pressure to raise interest rates. And the other villain in all this could be if the bond market begins to fall apart and the bond vigilantes show some type of resurgence and are able to jack up 10-year bond yields above 3%, which I think is a very good possibility. So if there's going to be a correction, it's going to be sharply higher interest rates caused by the bond market and forcing the Fed to take a stronger action to fight inflation. That would, what I would say, would be the bearish catalyst. If that does not occur, if the interest rates stay relatively low, then this mania will continue.
The Fed is projected to raise interest rates at a snail's pace. They're expected to raise them this month, possibly March, and maybe later on this fall. So three more rate hikes. On the day you and I are speaking, let's talk about interest rates. The 10-year Treasury note is almost at 2.5%. So, Gary, do you see that breaking out this year where yields could rise possibly to 3%? And would that cause, number one, trouble in the bond market, and money moves out of the bond market and goes into stocks, which could further fuel this rally?
That's probably likely. I predict the 10-year bond yield will rise to 3 to 3.25% between now and the end of the year. That would be maybe one of the easier bets, I think, that I would make. And especially now with the ECB, we'll be mothballing its bond buying operation at the end of September, and already cutting its bond buying in half as of this month. So interest rates will begin to rise in Europe and the United States. The only bank trying to hold the rates down will be the Bank of Japan, which will probably continue at that same pace, but won't be able to overcome the higher rates in the U.S. and in Europe. I think people are holding bonds, and they are feeling that they've been left in the dust, and that bonds are dead money, and actually they're going to be losing money. And so there will be people bailing out of bonds and going into alternative investments, stock indexes, and we also now have a digital currency, a digital coin, which cannot be minted by central banks. Bitcoin trading over $16,000, and that's kind of added to the inflationary psychology that I think we're going to start to see in the year ahead. So selling bonds, I think, is my strongest prediction. And then, as you mentioned, some swapping into stocks. And then it'll be up to the Fed as to whether they actually go forward with quantitative tightening, which is the other factor, and rate hikes. Those are the big wild cards. It's all in the hands of the Fed. But then again, the Trump administration is going to put in a very dovish Fed chairman, Mr. Powell, who I think will be even more dovish than Janet Yellen.
Gary, given the fact that you think that gold and oil and commodities move up this year, as you look at the charts of gold and oil on this Friday, as I mentioned, we have gold prices at $13.21 and we have oil at $62. What do your charts tell you in terms of where these two commodities are heading this year?
Well, looking at the crude oil market, it appears as if it will attempt to get into the mid-60s to upper 60 level, perhaps $70 a barrel on the spot market. My only concern about the crude oil bullish case, however, is the discounted pricing for future dated contracts. The December 2018 crude oil for Texas Sweet is trading $2.50 below the spot market at 59, and the December 2019 contract at 55.71, nearly $6 below the spot market. And I noticed during the time period before the crash of crude oil in the second half of 2014 that the future dated contracts were $15 to $20 below the spot market when no one thought a crash could occur. The longer dated traders were correct. So apparently they believe that as oil prices do go higher, that it will entice more producers to increase their output, perhaps even causing OPEC and Russia to break apart their agreement to restrict supply, or it could be additional supply from the U.S. So with all that said, I'll kind of moderate my bullish enthusiasm and will continue to think that crude oil will hit 65 to 70 a barrel this year. The gold market will trend higher with higher commodity prices. My basic scenario for the commodity markets is that the cycle is turning. The long 4.5-year downturn is over. Cycles are now starting to turn up. And I've always believed at some point that the growth of the world's population, increasing at 85 million persons per year on a net basis, would ultimately have demand catching up to supply or exceeding supply at some point. And we're already seeing substantial increases in the base metals, and as already seen some in the energy sector as well. So I believe these trends will continue, especially with ultra-low interest rates in the industrial world. And the pickup of the global economy, which is now becoming very widespread. The gold market will therefore try to climb higher along with higher commodity prices. The gold market has at times been hurt by higher interest rates. Whenever we see interest rates go up on the 10-year yield, gold tends to go down. We're seeing the opposite now for the first time in a long, long time. We've seen the gold market move up $80 an ounce since the Fed last raised rates a few weeks ago, even though the U.S. bond yield went up. So gold is shrugging off this increase in bond yield. That's very positive from a psychoanalytical point of view. I therefore think gold will go to about $1,400 on this run from about $1,320 right now, which will extend for the next several months.
So given the fact that commodities are heading higher, how dovish can the Fed remain? I mean, it's widely expected they'll raise rates 3 times this year. And as you and I were discussing earlier, the only thing that seemed to spoil this market would be an aggressive Fed taking away the punch bowl, because with the drop in corporate tax rates, with the repatriation of cash, there's going to be a lot of money that could fuel this market higher unless the Fed spoils it.
Well, you have a President Trump who likes to tweet about the stock market every day, and he's encouraging people to invest in the market. And the stock market now has become too big to fail. His presidency may even hang on the direction of the stock market. He's become so committed to it. So I believe there'll be tremendous pressure from the Trump White House on the Federal Reserve to keep interest rates down and to ignore the signs of increasing inflation and massive speculation. So I don't expect the Fed to do what it otherwise would have done. This is not Alan Greenspan. This is not Paul Volcker. This is Jay Powell, who was appointed by the Trump administration to be an easy money man, and that's sort of how I see it, and I think he will follow through on that script. That's how he got the job.
So a final question, Gary, given that and where the market is right now, what would you be doing with money if you had to invest?
Well, I am pretty well invested already, just hanging in there and hoping for the best. I don't see any major change in the long-term trend. One always has to psychologically be prepared for a pullback in the stock market. And the big questions will be, is this the beginning of the big correction or a pullback? But if the projections on the central banks are correct and everything else we've talked about, then I would continue to anticipate that the bull market will extend this year, 2018, and we could see another 5 to 10% increase in the Dow and the S&P 500 from our current levels. So that would put the Dow around 27,000, and the S&P would probably try to reach for the 3,000 level. That's about 10% from here, so maybe around 2850 as more of a short-term projection from 2735 or right now.
Well, listen, Gary, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, tell them how they could do so, please.
Well, I have a website in cyberspace. Address is globalmoneytrends.com. So if you'd like, you can go to Global Money Trends and you can take a look at some of the articles I posted there. And I also have a link to a Twitter page that I update occasionally. Right from the homepage of Global Money Trends will take you to my Twitter page.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.
If you're approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at financialsense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me on the program is one of the nation's top tax attorneys, Robert Wood. And Robert, I want to get right into this tax law because in previous tax laws, if we go back to 86, it was across the board. Tax rates were across the board. There weren't any phase-ins or phase-outs of deductions and other things like we have in this one. This is completely different, and it strikes me it affects people differently depending on the state you live in because of taxes, in the size of your home, your mortgage, and the value of your house.
It is different, although I was around in 1986. I graduated from law school and started practicing as a tax lawyer in 1979. So I vividly remember 1986, and it was viewed as kind of a sea change then, and it was in a number of respects. I mean, I think that was as fundamental a change in some ways, maybe even more so than the changes we have now. But I think when you talk about homes and the states that people live in and so on, I think you're alluding to state and local tax deductions being, you know, one of the huge changes that this new law is visiting on people. And it's certainly going to impact people significantly in California, where both of us live. And because state income taxes in California are very high, up to 13.3%, and state property taxes are not terribly high compared to the national figures, but with Prop 13, of course, a lot of it depends on when people bought their homes. And, you know, more recent homes, with the way property values are, tend to have high property taxes. So a $10,000 cap on an individual's ability to deduct the combination of state and local taxes, meaning property taxes and state income taxes, is a truly draconian kind of a change. And I think that is one that people don't really, and many people haven't really woken up yet or felt the pain yet, but I think they will.
Well, it looks like gold is finally starting to break out. Ever since the early weeks of December, we are now clearly over 1,300. Joining me on the program is Dave Morgan from the Morgan Report. And Dave, let's talk about gold in this $1,300 level. We tried to surmount that in late summer. We got up to 1,362. It couldn't hold. We went back, and here we are again, climbing the mountain again at 1,300. Does it hold here, or does it break?
Jim, I think we're going to hold at 1,300 level and go up from there. There's a seasonality each year in the early part of the year, especially for the other white metals, platinum, palladium. Let me get back to gold. That you have a pretty good rise in January. Sometimes it's 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. In 2016, it actually went in the late summer. The rally, you know, went up and down, but the overall trend was up. I'm not sure what we're going to see. I always let the market tell me more than I want to tell the market, but I'm confident that, one, the rebirth of the major bull market is intact. That started December 2015. Again, 2016 was a good year. 2017 wasn't a bad year for gold. I think it was about 12% or so. And this year, I think, is going to be equal to or better than 2016.
Dave, in your opinion, what's going to be the catalyst that drives gold? We do have the Fed hiking interest rates. It's widely expected they will go again with another quarter of a point this month after last month's quarter point. And it's widely expected with the stimulus in the economy, they'll go several more times this year. So what's going to be the catalyst here?
Well, I think it's going to be uncertainty, Jim. And as we've discussed off show, you know, we really look, most of the gold analysts look at real interest rates. In other words, if inflation is, let's say John Williams is wrong, it's not 8%. Let's say it's 4%, but that's the real inflation rate. And you're getting a yield on the long-term bond at, say, 3.5. You still got a negative 0.5% if you factor in inflation. And I've made this point over and over again in interviews and articles, written articles, about the real interest rate. And that's what Volcker had to do in 1980, because the inflation rate was truly at 13%, and they were using real numbers back then. And he came in and put, like, the T-bill rate at 17.5. So you're getting a real rate of return of about 4.5 at that time. So that's what I see. I mean, interest rates are important, but I think people focus too much on the Fed power. I think the Fed's ability to control things certainly is there. I don't want to downplay it too much. But what they say they're going to do versus what they actually do is something that people, especially that listen to Financial Sense, are well aware of. Look at what they're doing, not what they're saying. So I think, yeah, they'll increase interest rates, but they don't have a lot of room because they're in a box. And we've talked about that in the past.
Yeah. You know, one of the things with this tax cut, especially on the corporate side, the deficits, now they're talking about a $1 trillion stimulus bill. So it looks like the deficits are likely to go higher. And Dave, for the first time in 9 years, interest rates on the federal debt is starting to rise. The previous 8 years, even though we were adding trillions of dollars in new debt, the interest rate went down. So actually the government was spending less money in interest. I can't imagine if they allow interest rates to go up very high, what it's going to cost or what it's going to do to the deficit. Let's talk about some of the uncertainty this year. We've got geopolitical uncertainty, whether it's North Korea or the Middle East is always good for that. And then also you have congressional elections that are coming up in October. And we saw, obviously, the effect of Trump's election in November. But this time the elections are skewed to go the opposite direction. Do you think it's political uncertainty or it's market uncertainty that is moving money into gold right now?
Well, my opinion is it's market uncertainty. I mean, knowing, you know, the connections I have and how closely I'm associated with the metals at, you know, all levels, pretty much. A lot of the smart money has left the equity market and started moving to gold. So, and, you know, that can be verified if you know where to look. So I think it really is monetary. To say, you know, political isn't important or doesn't count, of course, is ridiculous. It does. But you asked me which one is the major one. I think the major one is by the smart money. The smart money has rode the equity bull quite a long ways. They see what's undervalued. It's gold. They got in probably around the 1240 level and been buying ever since. You see a huge shift in the commitment of traders. The big smart money has substantially switched their positions. Mm-hmm. So everything that I know and learn, and certainly willing to learn a lot more, indicates that, let's say the smartest guys on the street have moved into an asset class that very few people even care about anymore.
You know, as you take a look at equities, and especially at 2017, it was a spectacular year for just about everything except for maybe on some of the commodity side. Now we have asset shifting. It looks like money's moving into the commodity side. You're seeing an upward movement in energy. You're seeing it in materials. Do you think gold follows along with this? And what would you look for to confirm it?
Well, one thing I was making a note as you were talking is that very few are aware. I put it out on an update for our subscribers that there was a breakout, I think about 6 weeks ago. It's within a very near-term time frame. And the base metals ETF made a four-year high. That's a, what? And no one was paying attention to it, only because I subscribe to so many, you know, really good services to keep my work at, you know, a top-notch level, did I realize that. So your point is well taken. And gold, of course, is a different commodity. We all know that. I mean, Jim, you've probably done more in the early days about in the bull market than anybody. But it's money. But it goes along with the commodity cycle as well. So the answer is yes. Gold will probably not lead this time, but it will certainly be a major barometer relative to the financial, I'd say feelings mostly, backed by events. I mean, let's go back to geopolitical problems. I'll just touch on one, oil. I mentioned that in the January issue that was just issued a few days ago. And I'm concerned about the Middle East. I mean, all this shaking out of the shakes, so to speak. Yeah, I'm trying to be funny. But there's a lot going on with, you know, the software, the Palantir program, and I don't know much about it, but there's so much tension there that it wouldn't take much for a disruption to occur. And if one were to occur, that both gold and silver are highly correlated to the price of oil. And so I am a suspect that we're going to see a calm Middle East all year and a calm oil price all year.
Well, you know, certainly we've seen the pullback and the cutbacks in production, but I think the big surprise for 2017, at least in the energy front, was world global oil demand. The EIA has upgraded their estimates for consumption. So as economic growth picks up, that means more oil consumed. But I want to look at and get your opinion on something else, Dave, and that is Bitcoin. And a lot of people have postulated that Bitcoin has taken some of the luster out of gold. In other words, there's something other than gold that you can put your money in that I don't know if you'd call it tangible, but another asset. What influence do you think Bitcoin has had on the gold market?
Well, Jim, it's not my expertise. Thanks for asking. I'll give you a good answer. One is that I followed the story pretty much from the beginning. I was one of the very few that probably learned about it very early on from Robert Prechter. I saw Robert at the New Orleans Gold Show just a few months back in October and thanked him for being the first there. And he laughed at me over breakfast. He said it was my son that brought the Bitcoin idea, you know, and he wrote it in his newsletter. So I also attend the Anarchapoco conference. I'm a speaker on that event, and it's a huge Bitcoin, pro-Bitcoin event. I wrote an article called My Two Bits About Bitcoin years ago. And in that article, I said a lot. I'll try to be succinct. Basically, I said, if this thing goes to, I'm for alternative currencies. I'm for, you know, private money. I'm for liberty. I'm for all those ideas. But if this catches on the big way, be careful. Government hates competition. In fact, Ron Paul used to have a sign on his desk when he was a congressman that, you know, don't steal, the government hates competition, or something to that effect. The point is this. I have a good association with many of the major retailers and wholesalers globally, and anecdotal evidence that I trust these guys implicitly have told me more than one time that people have come in with like monster boxes of silver, you know, good tubes of gold, and cashed out, bought Bitcoin, and several months later come back and exchange Bitcoin back into gold or silver. So has it had an effect? Yes. How much? I'm not sure. I think the biggest effect has been in the millennials that have never opened a brokerage account. They don't know how markets work. They don't know what's required to set up a commodity account or a brokerage account or an options account or any of that stuff. All they know is they've got a mobile device. They can go to a Coinbase type of exchange. They can set it up over their phone in a matter of minutes, and they've never seen an up and down market. They've only seen an up market in Bitcoin. I mean, I got in this argument on a panel I was on in Australia. It wasn't really an argument, a discussion. And the point was made, well, you know, it's up and down and volatile, blah, 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 blah. I said, yeah, but the fact is that every low is a higher low, which is the definition of a bull market. It hasn't seen a bear market yet. And once that happens, and it will, then all these newbies that think that any cryptocurrency is going to make them rich overnight are going to have a rude awakening to how all markets work. So I'll stand on that statement.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, because if you take a look, some people are saying that it's a bubble. Others are saying, no, this is real. But anytime you see something that goes up parabolically, as Bitcoin did in 2017, Dave, you have to question what drives that. And we got a call from a listener who's been in cash mainly for the last 7 or 8 years expecting a crash. And all of a sudden he was interested in buying Bitcoin. So when you hear peripheral stories like that, you have to wonder and question the validity of the asset itself. I want to move on back to the gold market again. Typically, when you see gold move, you always like to see silver move to confirm it. What's your view on silver here, and is it confirming the move in gold?
Yes and no. Bad answer. First of all, my view is very solid now. And, you know, I've for years said pretty much that the whites lead to yellow, and I can make that argument, but I'm objective. I'm convinced this time, Jim, that we're going to see gold lead, and it is. 1300 is the breakout for gold. 17 approximately is a breakout for silver. There's a lot more congestion at silver at that level. And the ratio has gotten very, very high again, you know, like almost 80 to 1. And it's 80 ounces of silver to buy an ounce of gold. So for confirmation for this rally to be really good or better than, you know, what we've already achieved as of the lows, I want to see that ratio below 70. And I think we will achieve it. But silver is going to lag, I'm pretty certain. Once it overcomes this lagging position, like in a horse race, you'll see it, you know, move even with gold, and then you'll see it overtake gold. I'm convinced of that as well. When will that occur? I don't know. I just don't. I think it probably won't happen in a big way or a significant way until 2019. I think 2018 is going to be a year where there is a revaluation across the board of all asset classes. And as always, Jim, I want to choose the right word. My concern over the debt markets and the U.S. Treasuries in particular are something that I always keep a big eye on. And if the Fed does what they say and they want to reduce like $600 billion off of their balance sheet and sell treasuries into the market, then who's going to buy them and what's going to happen? Well, if it's an honest market, the interest rates are going to be bid up because the Fed has been taking care of the nanny world state by buying just about any U.S. debt market offering that anybody has if no one else wants it. So they become a net seller, and this is what they're saying. I'm not saying this is what they're going to do, but if they do establish that, I'm very concerned of what the repercussions could be.
Dave, let's talk about something else as well, and that is maybe a long-term driver, because we know the deficits are going up. They sort of peaked in terms of their decline in 2015. They've been going up ever since that. We have the new tax cuts. Now the administration is talking about $1 trillion, let's say, infrastructure package, putting that in place. You add that to the tax cuts. Could rising debt levels force, let's say, the Fed to pull back? And let's talk about the role in interest rates. The Fed has raised now with the Fed funds rate going up 5 or 6 times. It looks like it'll go up in the month of January. But one thing that has kept a damper on rising interest rates in a typical yield curve, as we would see, has been negative interest rates in Europe and Japan, which are still in a quantitative easing mode. How much, in your opinion, has negative interest rates in Europe and Japan influenced the treasury market here and thus interest rates and maybe to some extent the gold market?
Well, I think it's had an influence, and how much, I don't know, but I'd say it's been significant. The reason being, and I've stated this previously, is that with the U.S. in a positive interest rate mode, whereas, you know, Europe and Japan in a negative yield, anybody, excuse my parlance, but anyone with half a brain is going to get a positive return on their, you know, long-term or short-term saving. So I think that's pushed a lot of more money into the U.S. dollar than would have been otherwise. In other words, if Europe and Japan had positive yields on their debt, then there wouldn't be as much money flowing to the U.S. Treasury market. That's pretty much a fact. As far as dampening out, I mean, I just want to digress a bit, Jim, and help me out because, you know, you're a great thinker. But, you know, the idea of borrowing in capitalism isn't a bad thing. I mean, if you can borrow $20,000 and build something and get a yield off of that, of a positive, and pay back the debt, that's part of the situation. But when we're in a situation now where I think it's, you got to borrow $5 to yield a $1 increase in GDP, this is insanity. And we've been in that mode for a long time. So yes, there's a debt overhang that I think will dampen it out. The yield curve is extremely flat, as you well know. And that portends every time that there will be a recession. So will gold go down because of a recession? No, I don't think so. I think it'll go flat to up, bias being up, because, again, it's uncertainty. It's concern about what's really going on. Can this go on forever? Will the U.S. ever get its financial house in order? How safe are these debt instruments? You know, they keep producing more and more. When do I have enough? When do I want to quit buying them? That'll push up the interest rate, of course. So there's a lot interplaying. Jim, you understand it all, but I really think that this is the year where there is a shift in consciousness on the financial markets. And then I think after that, 2019, 2020, we'll return to a rather robust precious metals market, and we'll have to just wait and see.
And a final question, Dave, is we take a look at the gold market in the downturn that we saw after, let's say, 2014, or actually 2011, and we saw this period where gold got up to $1,900, dropped down below $1,100. It really impacted, just like the oil industry, a lot of the mine, and especially the big miners. We know the big guys have cut back on exploration. They've put some of these projects on the shelf, and they're not doing much exploration. So let's talk about the supply side and the miners themselves from an investment perspective.
Well, I'm pretty convinced that we're in peak gold. And I say that with caution because of my predecessor, Jerome Smith, that made some bold statements like that. And he's proven wrong because of a shift in technology. So I've always kept in the back of my mind, Jim, that there could be a shift in technology that I'm unaware of today that would alter the whole market. But as you said, I mean, if you're looking at, you know, 1 gram gold and you're mining that, I mean, this is ridiculously small amounts. And gold, I think, has peaked. You know, as far as silver's concerned, I do not think so. As I wrote in the Silver Manifesto a few years ago, I know of too many really big projects that will be coming online. For example, I forget the name of it, you may recall, but Pan American bought it. It was a disputed property in Argentina, and one company said they owned it, and the other one said they didn't, and it finally got sorted out. Anyway, Pan American bought it. It's got a very difficult metallurgy to extract the silver, but Pan American has the expertise to do that. So that's going to be coming online. And there's a couple more that I'm aware of. So peak silver, I don't think so. But peak gold, definitely. And there just is not much in that arena that offers, from my perspective, a lot of hope. You know, if I was a Newmont, I'd be concerned of how am I going to replace reserves, because there aren't enough juniors out there that have made good discoveries that are high enough grade and economic enough and large enough to make up for the ongoing deficit from these major miners. So from that aspect, gold might even be preferable to silver. As far as, you know, the interest in silver, it's a twofold thing, as you know, with more industrial use and the monetary demand. Certainly silver can outperform gold, and I think that it will.
So if you were to put money to work right now at the beginning of this year, would you buy metals? Would you buy a little in the stock, like go into an ETF like a GDX, buy a particular mining company? What would you be doing here, Dave?
Well, what I've been doing is what I gave to our members. I said, you know, get ready for a nice trading rally in January, February. I don't know how long it'll go, but I'll, you know, keep you tuned the whole way. As I did in 2016, just to digress a bit, 2016, I said there'll be a rally in the January, February. We got in relatively low in December, rode it all the way up, and I got out right at the top based on the Commander Traders Report. So that was a heck of a rally for everybody. We didn't do that well in 2017. What I'm doing right now, since I have enough physical and I like to see my money work harder, and I love to trade on a intermediate term basis. I've been accumulating shares throughout the entire month of December. But if I were to do it right now, I'd be more inclined to do the equities than I would the metal, as long as I had the metal. And as far as ETFs are concerned, we did an interview with Frank Holmes a while back, and I like the one that he has set up. And I forget the symbol for it, Jim, forgive me. But I think that's probably your best bet to leverage in an ETF format, certainly on free market. If you want to use the SLV or the GLD or the GDX or the GDXJ or what have you, I don't care. As far as safety and best risk to reward profile, I think Frank Holmes's approach is very similar to the approach we use in the Morgan Report as far as how we pick equities. And that ETF is based on an analysis that he's done. And Frank does a really deep look at how the algorithms trade these markets, because he well knows, and most of his lectures the last few years have gone on and on in a very interesting manner about how the algorithms are driving the gold market like most markets and what they look for. And they don't care. They are absolutely objective. They don't care who the management is, where it's located. All they look at is basically fund flow and where it's going, and they move with the market.
All right. Well, listen, Dave, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, how could they do so, please?
I think the best thing, Jim, is to go to the main site, themorganreport.com, and just get on our free email list. And if you prefer, you can go to our sister website. It's called Riches in Resources, all one word, richesinresources.com. And you can get a free report on basically the resource market, because as you well know, I rebranded the Morgan Report because, yes, I am fascinated with the silver market, but we do so much more. We looked at rare earth elements, the energy metals, the base metals, et cetera. We look at everything in the resource sector that's a mineral. We don't touch on oil and gas very often, but anything that's involved in the ground that isn't energy-based, we cover it in the Morgan Report.
Now, coming up next, actually, that's the topic. What's coming up next? It was a wonderful year for 2017 for investors. Stock market up double digits, GDP up 3%. A year where just about everybody made money. What about 2018? And what we're doing next here on the program on The Big Picture is to follow the tradition. The first two programs of the new year are a series of predictions for the coming year. We'll examine what the Wall Street big firms think, those people thinking outside of the box, and possibly some unanticipated surprises and black swans. All of that coming up next on The Big Picture as the Financial Sense News Hour continues at financialsense.com.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.